is my real pleasure that this weekend we have a journalist, author, all-around great guy, kibbutznik, Amir Tibon visiting us. He is currently the Washington correspondent for Israel's leading paper, Haaretz. And last night he talked about the kibbutz from a personal perspective and about how it addresses a sense of loneliness, which is endemic in our modern cities and advanced societies, and how the kibbutz, as much as we try to do here, is one answer to develop that sense of human connection. Perhaps one of the great forms of human disconnection is what allows entire peoples to be oppressed, to suffer refugee status, and otherwise be denied their rights. And one of the important struggles for this, which doesn't get so much play in America, but certainly has been in important in Israeli politics, surrounds the Kurds and their own desire for independence and some of the really tremendously difficult abuses that they have suffered. So without further ado, it's my privilege and honor to call up our scholar in residence, Amir Tibon, to speak about why Israel supports Kurdish independence.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. So, to those of you who were here last night, it's a pleasure to meet you again. And for those who weren't, it's a pleasure to meet you for the first time. And, you know, being on the stage for the second time in a row, I already feel very comfortable at home, surrounded by friends. So thanks again for having me here, for inviting me here. And, you know, this week, the parasha is Parashat Vayeshev. And when I had to think about how I'm going to speak about the Kurdish issue, and I said maybe the first, you know, hint to look at is to go and read in the parasha. And this is a really interesting one because, you know, we started by talking about, or, you know, by reading about Yosef, who is being in a terrible situation. His brothers have decided to throw him in a hole in the ground, in a well, and get rid of him that way. And sell him off and then go and tell their father that he's actually was killed. And he's in a terrible situation of distress. He's a young boy. You can only imagine the kind of feeling that he has, you know, being betrayed like that by his own brothers, being in such a physically and theoretically low situation. And as you read through the parasha and you see what happened to him when he went down to Egypt and he starts in, you know, in a very low kind of situation, and with time he grows to prominence and success. And as we all know the story, eventually he becomes a very influential advisor to the rulers of Egypt and really finds his place. And it is a, you know, it's a sad story, but it has a happy ending. So I read that and I thought, well, first of all, you know, just last week, we commemorated 70 years to the UN vote on partition in Palestine, the vote that laid the international foundation for recognizing the state of Israel, really one of the most important achievements of the Zionist movement, certainly in the field of diplomacy. And that decision came only 2 years after the end of World War II, after the Holocaust. And when I thought about the story of Yosef and how from this terrible situation he was in, crying and helpless and betrayed by his own brothers, and by the end of the parasha we see his rise to prominence and success, I thought that this is really an interesting comparison for our people, that from the lowest point in our history, the Holocaust, and in our family, this is a personal issue, to rise to a situation where we have our own country and it is being recognized by the nations of the world, that's a huge turnaround. And I thought about it too, because as the rabbi said, the issue that I'm going to speak about here today is another people in our neighborhood in the Middle East who are striving for their independence, who want to have their own state, and these are the Kurdish people. And they are right now, unfortunately, still in the stage where Yosef is in the beginning of the parasha, in the beginning of the story. The Kurdish people, just to give some reference and to put things into perspective, they are the largest ethnic group in the world, or national ethnic group in the world, that does not have its own state. There are many different groups in the world, national ethnic groups, that don't have statehood and wish to have one. Obviously, we know of the Palestinians, with whom Israel has an ongoing conflict that I personally, not everyone has to agree, hope will be resolved by them eventually getting their own state. We know of the people of Catalonia, who just a few weeks ago were in the headlines because all the world was watching their struggle for independence, trying to get, out of the grip of the Spanish government. We know of the recent referendum in Scotland, and, there are many examples. But in terms of numbers, the Kurds really are an exception, because we're talking about a national group of, according to some estimates, more than 20 million people who are spread throughout the Middle East. Most of them live in areas controlled by four countries: Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey, who want to have their own state, want to have their own independence. And so far, in this, after dozens of, decades that they've been fighting for this, have fallen short. Now, I mentioned the UN partition plan and how Israel managed to have this amazing turnaround, rising from the lowest point in our history to this point of great success, because in my own travels as a journalist, I've had the privilege to visit the Kurdish areas in some of these countries I mentioned. One of the most fascinating journalism experiences that I've had was going in 2014 to the border triangle between Iraq, Syria, and Turkey to write about the Kurdish struggle for independence over there. And usually when I, as an Israeli journalist, travel in Arab countries, in parts of the Arab Muslim world, a lot of times I'm cautious about mentioning the fact that I'm Israeli. Not always it will be welcomed very nicely. But I can tell you that in that part of the world, in the Kurdish region, in the border triangle of these three countries, Turkey, Iraq, and Syria, wherever I said that I was from Israel, the reception I received was 100% supportive. And not only that, one phrase that kept repeating itself was, "We are inspired by you, Israel. We are inspired by your story. We are inspired by the way in which you managed, the Jewish people, to rise from the ashes of the Holocaust, from this point that seemed like the end of everything, and 3 years later, to have your own independent state against the wish of many regional powers, some of whom, by the way, are powers that to this day want to stop the Kurdish people from gaining their independence and their state." The history of Israel's relationship with the Kurds is a fascinating episode. I'm not going to be able to go into its entirety because, it's Shabbat, we're in the synagogue, and our time is limited. But if I will look at it briefly, when Israel was a new state, just founded in the Middle East, surrounded by mostly hostile Arab nations, the Kurds were one of the few groups in the Middle East that Israel immediately saw a potential for connection with. Because, as we say in the Middle East, the enemy of my enemy can sometimes be my enemy, but also can sometimes be my friend. And when it came to the Kurds, there was a potential for friendship. The Kurds, as I said, spread out over these four countries, Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. They are a mostly Muslim population, overwhelmingly Sunni Muslim. And from a national ethnic point of view, most of them don't see themselves as Turks or as Syrians or as Iraqis or as Iranians. They see themselves as the Kurdish people. And the way they are spread out geographically, again, because this is Shabbat, I don't have a visual map behind me, but if you can close your eyes or maybe keep them open, but imagine in your mind the map of the Middle East, you will see this corridor that goes from the western northern part of Iran through the northern part of Iraq, and then also expands to the southeastern part of Turkey and the northeastern part of Syria. So if you look at this corridor, this is where the vast majority of the Kurdish population lives. And supposedly it would make it very easy for them to gain independence because you have a large group of one ethnic nationality and mostly of the same religion that lives in the same area. What could be easier than declaring this area, you know, the state of Kurdistan? But unfortunately, the four countries where the Kurdish population lives, they are totally against it. All of them oppose the idea that the Kurds will have their own state, and this is a struggle that has been going for many, many years. In the 1960s, the ties between Israel and the Kurds were at a high point, because as I said, Israel was a small country surrounded by hostile powers, looking all the time for potential friends in the region. And there were cooperations, mostly secret ones. The Mossad, our main intelligence agency, would help the Kurds learn how to fight, how to gather intelligence, how to progress their own cause. Later in the 1970s, 80s, into the 1990s, the relationship soured. And this is a period in the historical relationship that I personally, as an Israeli, and again, don't have to agree, I'm not very proud of. Israel at some point had a very strong alliance with Turkey, which was, you know, if we're looking back into the 80s, the 90s, it was ruled by the secular Turkish military. Not like today when the ruler of Turkey, President Erdogan, is an Islamist extremist who doesn't really like Israel. So we can't really be his friends. But back at the time when there was a secular military rule in Turkey, we found Turkey as a potential friend in a very religious Arab area. And one of the prices that Israel decided strategically to pay for its relationship with Turkey was to betray our friends, the Kurds. There is even claims that at some point Israel helped Turkey gather information to arrest the leaders of the Kurdish opposition groups in Turkey. But what's really interesting about the Middle East is that dynamics change all the time. And yesterday's friend is tomorrow's foe, and the other way around. And I would say that one point that really changed the regional dynamic with regards to Israel was the Arab Spring that started in 2011, when we suddenly saw countries in the region torn apart. Today, when we talk about the countries of Iraq and Syria, it's not really clear what we are talking about. These countries have been broken into pieces. At the same time that this happened, Iran, with its own regional ambitions, became a much more aggressive player, supporting terror groups all around the Middle East, having a large arsenal of missiles aimed at Israel from different directions. And Turkey, under its new leadership, the leadership of Erdogan, the Islamist party, became much more hostile to Israel. Started supporting terror organizations that work against Israel, inciting the entire Muslim world against Israel. And in this situation, there was suddenly a very strong warming of Israel's relationship with the Kurds, whether it's in Syria, Iraq, Turkey. And things got to a high point 3 years ago in 2014 when Israel officially, for the first time, and the first person who actually put a stamp on it was Shimon Peres, our late president, came forward and said, we are now officially supporting the Kurdish claim for independence. Not just clandestine ties like we had in the past, not just secret cooperations, but we are out in the open calling on the world to support the Kurdish struggle. And later, the Prime Minister Netanyahu also made a similar call, and ever since then, it's become an official policy of Israel. Unfortunately, in the 3 years that have passed, we have not really seen a lot of progress on this important cause. And why is it important? First of all, and again, I'm going to share some personal views now. You don't have to agree with them. My view is that a people that wants to get independence and, you know, they want to have their own state, the world should allow it, as long as there is some kind of reasonable, you know, way to do it. And with regards to the Kurdish question, I don't think there is much of a doubt. The Kurds also were a major force in fighting one of the most important battles of the entire world in recent years, which is the battle against ISIS in Iraq. If you ask the American commanders who oversaw the coalition to fight ISIS, it's a huge coalition. We had dozens of countries commit to fight ISIS, Arab countries, European countries, countries in Africa. But if you ask the people who oversaw this international coalition, who actually put boots on the ground? Who actually had their, you know, blood spilled to fight against ISIS? The Kurds are a major, major force in that story. They were very important in pushing back ISIS, both in Iraq and in Syria. And, you know, it's not just the fact that they fought against ISIS, also the way that they did it. The Kurdish military forces have a large presence of women fighters. This is a source for pride. By the way, there's one other military in the Middle East where you have a growing percentage of women fighters, which is the IDF, of course. We have pilot, you know, combat pilots and officers. It's not always going smooth. There are certain people in Israel, more religious, who are against this, and they say, we don't want women to be in combat positions in the military. It's an ongoing debate in our society. I personally am proud about it, but, you know, again, you don't have to agree. And so the Kurds really represent a force for good in our region, for moderation, for fighting back against terrorism. And unfortunately, if we go back to the story of the parasha, they are still in the stage in the history of their struggle of being betrayed by their own brothers. Because despite the huge contribution that they made to the struggle against ISIS, despite the fact that if you look at broader policy questions, they are no doubt a better ally to the West than many other powers in the region, the results so far of the breakup of the Arab world and the recent events has not been an international consensus of Kurdish independence, but rather we've seen the last two American administrations, the Obama administration before and the Trump administration now. They have many differences between them, obviously, on a whole range of questions. But when it came to the Kurdish question, both of them didn't really deliver for the Kurds. And in the moment of truth, preferred regional alliances with countries like Turkey and Iraq over the justice for the Kurds. I think that if we look towards the future, the Kurdish people are not going to give up their desire for independence. We're talking here about millions of people who don't feel that they belong to the countries that control them right now and want to have their own venue and to express their own national aspirations. And I think that Israel is not going to go back on this issue. Israel is not going to turn its back on them, because there was a real moment of truth in the last few years when we saw the fact that they stood up in this fight against terrorism. And I can only hope and pray that with time, we will also see other countries in the world, like the United States, join this very, very important call. So this is one issue I wanted to enlighten the crowd here about today. And it also connects to the issue I'm going to talk about in the next session of the scholarship weekend, which is the ties between Israel and the Arab world. I wanted to give, you know, I was talking to the rabbi, and I wanted to give a little taste about the regional dynamics and how Israel plays the regional politics. So we talked about the Kurds, and in the next session, we're going to open it up to a much wider, we'll have more time to, a much wider look at how Israel is managing these events. So thank you for listening, and thank you for having me here. I'm very excited. It's a huge honor, and, you know, it's good to be here among family, Brian and Yael and Edith. So Shabbat Shalom, everyone.